have Rabbi Aryeh Leibowitz here with us to speak to us at Mishmar. I'm sure that most, if not every single one of you, know very well who Rabbi is. For those who do not, Rabbi Aryeh Leibowitz is the Rabbi of the Beit Knesset North Woodmere. He's the director of Smicha at Ritz. He has very popular Daf Yomi Shirim, as well as the 10-minute Halacha series that he has on YU Torah. It is a privilege to have him here with us at Mishmar this evening. Rabbi Leibowitz, thank you very, very much for being here.
My pleasure. Thank you so much. Thank you for inviting me. It's always so exciting to be able to talk to guys from Yeshiva HaKotel. Especially, I got to look around the room over here and so many friends. It's nice to see you all. And from what I understand, this is like the end of the Zman kind of Mishmar, the end of the Zman Shmuz. By the way, I brought Rav Schachter with me, so he's, in the background. So I thought that maybe we'll deliver a message that is meaningful, that I think is meaningful related to this week's parsha, but I think is particularly meaningful when it comes to Bnei Yeshiva, particularly Bnei Yeshiva of your age, and I think even particularly Bnei Yeshiva of your particular yeshiva. Let's start with this. You know, as a rule, there are certain traits, there are certain characteristics that a person has that are categorized as particularly negative or particularly positive. We know for sure that the Rambam tells us that almost everything is something that there's a middle path on and that the person is supposed to take. The Shvil Hazav, and we know the entire Sefer Orchos Sadikim is based on the principle that there's no such thing as a good midah or a bad midah. There are only ways to use midos in a good or bad way, meaning the entire Sefer is based on that premise, that even Gaiva, which is the Avi Avos HaTumah of all midos, it's the worst of all midos, even Gaiva sometimes has a place, very, very rarely, but sometimes has a place. So as a rule, jealousy, kina, is a negative trait. One might even say it's motzi'in es adam min ha'olam. It's something that's so bad that makes a person's life miserable. If you're always looking at what other people have, or what other people do, or what others are able to do, and then you become envious of them, it's a clear expression of a shortcoming in one own sense of self, in one own sense of hakaras hatov to the ribono shel olam for what he has in life. However, sometimes jealousy can cause inspiration instead of depression. Sometimes jealousy can bring about activity rather than passivity, meaning it can bring a person to do something and to be inspired and to want more and to want to be more and want to do more instead of crushing a person, instead of making a person feel like he's a nothing, he's a nobody, look, that person has everything and I don't have anything. And instead of bringing out all of the worst traits in a person, sometimes it can mobilize a person to actually do something. The Gemara Maseches Basra tells us, the famous passage, the famous line, Kina Sofrim Tarbe Chachma, that if a person is jealous of religious, intellectual accomplishments, it could be very, very healthy, and it could contribute a great deal to our lives and our communities. That if a person sees, well, how come that guy's able to, you know how many people finish Shas because they looked at someone else and they said, if that guy's able to finish Shas, why wouldn't I be able to finish Shas? Well, I should be no worse than that. And they just feel a sense of jealousy. I remember before the Siyum HaShas, the Aguda put out all these videos to promote the upcoming Siyum. So one of the videos was Rabbi Yaakov Bender, the Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshiva Darche Torah, who happens to be an incredibly inspirational person on so, so many levels. I don't know him well, but the more I learn about him, the more I know he's a first cousin once removed of the president of Yeshiva University. Bender and Berman are really the same last name. The Bender family changed it for some reason. But anyway, that's just a little biographical note. But Rabbi Yaakov Bender, where was I? Yeah, in the video of in advance of the Siyum HaShas, Rabbi Yaakov Bender said that this was his first time finishing Shas. Why did he start Daf Yomi? He's a busy Rosh Shiva. He's got a lot going on. Why did he start Daf Yomi? Because he said at the last Siyum HaShas, he was watching the video, and on the video there was a plumber who had finished Shas. And, you know, in the promotional video, there's a plumber who said, this is my first Siyum HaShas, I finished Shas, I'm a plumber. And Rabbi Yaakov Bender said to himself, a plumber could finish Shas and a Rosh Yeshiva can't? And he was jealous of the guy. How come that guy can finish Shas and I can't? And it was the healthiest kind of jealousy. It was a kinasofrim. It was a kinasofrim tarbe chachma. It caused him to want to learn more. Jealousy of a certain type can be very, very healthy. Rashi comments on the juxtaposition between the karbonos of the Nesiim, which contributed to the unusual length of last week's parsha. You know, the when my kids were davened in a minyan in the backyard last week, and they had to split the laning. So it's like, you know, everyone was vying for chamishi or shishi. You know, you have shishi, you're golden. Then you're good. You only have to learn a few psukim and just repeat, and you know those psukim by heart anyway. You know the trump by heart anyway. So that contributed to the length of last week's parsha. The repeat of the karbonos of the Nesiim, and that's juxtaposed with the avodas haMenorah, which we begin this week's parsha with. And I'm assuming most of the people I'm talking to are in Chutz La'aretz right now, because otherwise the words last week's parsha and this week's parsha do not work. Right, we're one off from each other. So Rashi writes, Lama nismacha parshas haMenorah leParshas haNesiim. Lefisha kashara Aaron Chanukas Hanesiim. When Aaron saw the Chanukas Hanesiim, chol shadaito shelo haya imahem lohu velo shifto. He was dejected that he and his shevet were sort of left out in the cold. Va'amala Hakadosh Baruch Hu. So Hakadosh Baruch Hu told him, no, shelcha gadol mishalahem. Your portion is going to be greater than their portion. You get the menorah. So yeah, okay, the Nesiim got the karbanos, and you think they got such a gavaldika avoda. No, you get the menorah. The question is asked by everybody, right? If you've ever learned the Rashi, you ever learned the Maimon Chazal, you have to ask the question: how does the menorah comfort Aaron? How does the menorah make him feel any better? He was jealous that he hadn't participated in the pageantry and the celebration of Chanukah Samishkan. Can you imagine what kind of celebration that must have been? How is a guarantee to be involved in the day-to-day activities of the menorah at all comforting to him? If somebody wanted to dedicate their own Kodesh in a shul and he lost out on the opportunity, right? They want to, it's going to be in big, the name is going to be big right in front of the shul, you know, dedicated by such and such a family. He lost out on the opportunity. So we'd say, don't worry, we'll give you Glila once in a while. We'll give you Psicha once in a while. Don't worry about it. You'll get Psicha. Whenever you want, you can get Psicha. I don't want Psicha. I want my name up in lights. I want to be able to be involved in the Chanukah. How's that comfort? You know, don't worry. You could pay the electric bills of the shul. I don't want to pay the electric bills. You know that yeshivas have a much harder time paying the electric bills very often than they do raising money for a building. Because a building, you could put a name on. You can't put a name on an electric bill, right? So we have to make a special mishaberach for people who give ner lama'ar in order to encourage people to want to pay for those things too. But how does this comfort Aaron HaKohen that he's going to be told, oh, don't worry, you'll get to light the menorah, you'll get to light up the basement, you get to pay the electric bills. There's also an interesting passage in the Alkot Shimoni about the menorah that compares what Moshe had built to what Shlomo HaMelech built. The Yalkut Shimoni says, Lama osa Moshe shiva neros, Ushlomo Melch asa shivim neros. Why is it that Moshe Rabbeinu made 7 neros, and Shlomo Melch made 70 neros? El Moshe akar shiva umos mi lefnei Yisrael, aval Shlomo hi Moshe al shivim umos, shenemro Shlomo hi Moshe b'chalam amlachos. Says Yalkut Shimoni, fascinating. Shlomo Melch built 10 different menorahs, each one 7 branched, And Moshe only built one. Why? Because it all corresponds to how many nations of the world he ruled over or managed to uproot. Moshe Rabbeinu managed to uproot the 7 nations from Eretz Yisrael, so he gets a menorah, he builds a menorah of 7 branches. Shlomo HaMelech ruled over the entirety of the world, all Shivim Umos, all 70 nations, and therefore he built 70 branches worth of menorahs. What on earth does that mean? You know, Shlomo HaMelech had more money, more gold to work with. What, he had more military success, and therefore we celebrate that through the menorahs. And also, Moshe Rabbeinu, did I miss something in the story? Moshe Rabbeinu chased out the 7 nations. Whatever happened to Moshe Rabbeinu never making it quite into Eretz Yisrael? He didn't chase out anybody. He didn't make it. He didn't make it into Eretz Yisrael. That was Yeshua's job. Yeshua had, you know, learn the beginning of Sefer Yeshua, the 7 years of Kibush and Chiluk, much of Sefer Yeshua. So that's all Yeshua's job. So what does that mean that Moshe Rabbeinu was, he got rid of the 7 nations? So I think the way to approach this might be as follows. There is an interesting balance that a Jew has to strike between communalistic and individualistic goals. There's a lot of emphasis, and rightfully so, and particularly in your yeshiva, and particularly recently, on the importance of achdus in the Jewish community, on the importance of coming together, right? Vayichan. Vayichan shom Yisrael neged ahar. We come together. We're a single unit. Yeah, there's a great deal of emphasis, as there should be, and there's no way to overstate the value of achdus in Klal Yisrael. One of my kids said, "Did you give a shiur on whatever topic I've on Kavod HaTorah?" I said, "Yeah, that was in the Vayachanu program." My son said, "You idiot." He didn't say, "You idiot," but he's like, "Vayachanu." No, the whole point is that it's called Vayichan, that it's a singular, that we all come together. So Vayichan. That certainly is a very great value, but we sometimes forget that it's not enough to belong to a great group. We also have to establish ourselves as individuals and find our individual kochos that are able to contribute to that whole of Klal Yisrael. You know, in the words of Chazal, sometimes a kedera debetrei, lo chamimi velo kariri. If you have everyone doing everything, nobody's doing anything. Meaning sometimes you need an individual to stand up, and that individual has to use his unique kochos in order to get things done. I hope that Rabbi Taragin didn't wake up early enough in the morning to be here right now, but if you've seen, you have seen, you've seen it on many levels, but the world has seen, with the Vayichan program in particular, how one person's drive and ability to recruit his army of you guys to help him out, but one person's drive, one person's determination, one person's just absolute commitment to getting something done is able to make the impossible happen. For who? For all of Klal Yisrael. Not just for his family, not just for his Talmidim, not just for his yeshiva, not just for the people within his segment of Klal Yisrael. One person who's able to harness certain kochos that are very, very unique, and he's able to do something for all of Klal Yisrael. To serve the community, sometimes a person has to be able to look at themselves as an individual and say, well, what do I have? What have I got that's going to be able to help the community? We each have personal responsibility in our religion to become committed Avdei Hashem to the best of our ability. And only once we develop in that way, we develop the self, will we be truly valuable to the community. It's true of pretty much every great person. Every great person, prior to becoming that great force for the community, spent a lot of time on themselves. They spent a lot of time developing those kochos, with an eye toward Klal Yisrael, with an eye toward serving the Ribbono Shel Olam and his children, and helping his children, helping the Ribbono Shel Olam's children. But a lot of alone time, a lot of figuring out who I am, how to become great, and actually become great, dedicating time to Talmud Torah, and to Avodas Hashem, to Tefillah, to Tikkun Amidos, and then, unleashing that force of a developed personality on Klal Yisrael. You know, there's a unique element of the menorah. Aaron HaKohen was the CEO of the Mishkan. He could do any and all avodos, right? He could walk in any time and say, "I'm taking over here." He couldn't have possibly been upset or jealous because the Nesiim had a chance to bring karbanos. Any day he wants to bring a karban, he could bring whichever karbanos he wants. What bothered Aaron was that he had no personal role in the Mishkan. That everything he did, was a representative of Klal Yisrael. Shlucha Didan, Shlucha Derachmana, but it's Shlucha. It was never him. It was always Shlucha Shel Adam Kamoso. He was always assuming the identity of somebody else. What he couldn't do was to express his own individuality, to develop himself. So when Aaron saw that each Nasi HaShevet brought a karban, and you know, every Dvar Torah last week, you heard, my daughter last week at the Shabbos table said, Dvar Torah. So I said, "How do you say Dvar Torah?" So she said, "Yeah." She said, "The question is, all of the Nasiim brought exactly the same karban, so why does the Torah have to go through the whole, you know?" So one of my sons said, Oh my God, this is the third time I heard this Dvar Torah today. Like, you know, my Rebbe said it, and I listened to Shir Vay Torah, and he said it, like, and now my sister said it. Everyone says that same Dvar Torah, right? And the Vart is always the same, that each one did it with their own characteristic individuality and expressing themselves in their own way. So even though we're doing externally, we're doing the same things, and, you know, people in a group very often look the same, but they're really expressing themselves somewhat differently, as opposed to, you know, and it's true, by the way, sometimes you see people that look totally whacked and different from each other, but really all they're doing is conforming, right? There are some people that, you know, they'll dress funny and they'll put on weird things and, you know, to express their individuality, but all they're really doing is conforming to the need to look weird, to look different. But there's nothing that's intrinsically individual about them. And then there are some people that dress exactly the same way. You could go into a yeshiva and everyone's wearing the same color shirt and pants and everything else. They look exactly the same way, but each one is developing as Neved Hashem in his own unique, entirely unique way, as Neved Hashem developing his own connection, right? And the yeshivish guys, right, what do they do? If they're all wearing white shirts and black pants, how do they express their individuality? So it comes in one of two ways, either a unique tie or unique socks, right? Because those are the only things that are allowed to change in the outfit. Sometimes they get creative, unique belt buckle, right? But you know, there's that. Or a unique way of connecting to the Ribbono Shel Olam. Something that's their way of connecting to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So Aaron HaKohen sees all the Nesiim, and they get to be themselves. They get to express their own religious growth. They're proactive in their own personal Avodas Hashem. And that causes jealousy, because Aaron HaKohen is always the Shliach of somebody. So the response of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to Aaron is, you get the menorah. When the Rambam lists the mitzvos in Sefer HaMitzvos, he always says, Shetzivanu, that we collectively are commanded, as in, you know, Shetzivanu Lishmar HaMikdash. Shetzivanu, you know, when he talks about all the mitzvahs of the Mikdash. Shetzivanu Lahasim Lechem HaPanim Lefanav Tamid. Shetzivanu Lahavir Eish Al HaMizbeach. When he talks about the menorah, the Rambam writes, Hu Shenitztavu HaKohanim Lahadlik Neros. Well, Kohanim did a lot of these things. Why is it dafka not shetzivanu shenitztavu hakohanim la'adlik haneros? Because apparently in the Rambam's view, the menorah is not done by kohanim as representatives of Klal Yisrael. This is truly shalecha. This Aaron, this is actually yours. This talks to your nekudas haneshama. This isn't as a representative of Klal Yisrael. And that's the comfort, that's the nechama that's given to Aaron. There's a famous Pnei Yeshua, Masechah Shabbos, in the second paragraph of Masechah Shabbos, asked the Kasha about the Chanukah miracle on that Gemara, on the Chanukah sugya. It's truly amazing. We found a jar of untainted oil amidst all of the ruin and the destruction. It's really amazing. And that the oil lasted. You know, there are a lot of Kashas, though, that you could ask on this whole story. So one of the Kashas that we're not going to deal with is like, okay, it was amazing that it lasted for 8 days, but, like, you know, sometimes things last longer than you think, right? Than you think they will. You're still able to squeeze more ketchup out of that bottle. I thought we finished it two meals ago. Okay, yeah, it's nice. It's good. I always call it the miracle of my Toyota Corolla. I brought my Toyota Corolla to the mechanic once, and because it died, and he said, you need a new battery. I said, okay. He said, whoa. This is the original battery on the car. This lasted, you know, like years longer than it should have. So I said, well, that's exactly the Chanukah miracle, right? Meaning, it just had a little more juice. It didn't have that much juice, and it lasted longer than it should have. So I was zochet to the Chanukah miracle. Meaning, like, what is it? What's the great miracle already? But the Pnei Yeshua asks a little differently. He doesn't ask about the, you know, what's so special about the fact that it lasted so long. He asks a little differently. The Pnei Yeshua says, famous kasha about the Chanukah miracle. It's amazing we found this jar of oil. But the Pnei Yeshua says, who needs it? There's a rule of tumah hutra b'tzibur. For an avodas hatzibur, oil that's tameh is perfectly fine. So Rabbi Tzal Rudinsky, in one of his farim, I think it's in one of his farim, he writes that maybe you could say a chiddush based on this Rambam, that this isn't tzibur. The Avodas HaMenorah is not the tzibur. It's for the Kohanim only. And it's not like all of the other Avodas in the Mikdash, the Kohanim are shluchei didam, and therefore it's all tzibur related. No, for this you actually needed tahar oil. And maybe it was critical to have tahar oil. Wow. But a chiddush. But al pi hashkafa, maybe this is the comforting news for Aaron HaKohen. So when Aaron was shown that he and his clan of Kohanim will have their own special relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam through the menorah, he was satisfied. He recognized the importance of having just some me and a Kodesh Baruch Hu time, and how a true public servant has to develop privately first if he intends to fulfill the full effect of his talent to the community, and to be able to provide to the community what he possibly can in the future. And just as members of Klal Yisrael have a personal and communal responsibility to contribute to the fabric of our society, the Jewish people have to excel and thrive independently, and then also relate to the world around us. Meaning this idea of achieving in the and developing in the micro in order to affect the macro applies for us as individuals, and then zooming out to Klal Yisrael, it also applies to us as Klal Yisrael, and then zooming out to the rest of the world, becoming the Or LaGoyim that we're supposed to be. Moshe built the menorah, which according to the Medrash symbolized the ability of the Jewish people to conquer Eretz Yisrael. That's our home. It's how we develop our internal society. It's how we develop, you know, with Klal Yisrael. It's how we run our country. It's domestic policy. It's the place for the Jewish people to grow as an individual nation. Moshe didn't actually conquer the seven kings, but he was the paradigm for how individual accomplishment can lead to superior ability to contribute to the entire community. Where did Moshe Rabbeinu spend his formative years? All alone. Decades. All alone. And what became of that? He became a loner. He became someone who just, you know, was stuck somewhere on a mountaintop somewhere all by himself. No, mountaintop is a funny way to say it, because he did end up on a mountaintop all alone for 40 days. But all alone, and that, what did that, that led him to be the leader of 3 million people. The founder of a nation. Because of all that alone time, he was able to become the greatest leader the Klal has ever known. Superior ability to contribute to the community after formative years spent all alone. His initial mission was given to him while he was all alone with his sheep. His shining moment was all alone at the top of a mountain for 40 days. Without that time to grow as an individual, Moshe Rabbeinu never would have been able to become Moshe Rabbeinu, the true Rabban Shel Yisrael who presided over a nation that was all alone in the desert for 40 years. Ooh, then comes Shlomo HaMelech. Shlomo HaMelech, according to the Gemara, was Malach Bekipa. He ruled the entire world. His name was made by entertaining foreign dignitaries and allowing his wisdom to be appreciated by the world. He was a tourist attraction because he was so brilliant. Chacham Mikol Adam. They would come to enjoy, bask in the rays of his brilliance. He interacts with the world, perhaps too much. Shlomo builds 10 menorahs, representing the need for the Jewish people to serve the larger human community of 70 nations. And this is an important hashkafa, particularly in our formative years, that when a person wants to be someone who matters, sometimes you find people getting ahead of themselves. You know, someone at a very young age that believes that they're already the Rashka Bahag, they're already affecting everyone, they're going to be they're an inspiring figure, they're inspirational speakers, they're 22 years old and they're talking about Shalom Bayis and you know, like things that they, you know, when they're single, you know, they, whatever, it's just like, well, what are you doing? You know, you're not there yet. When was the first time you ever heard of Rav Asher Weiss? Think about that. Well, you guys are young, so he's been around for, but I'll tell you the first time I ever heard of Rav Asher Weiss. There was I was an assistant rabbi in a shul called Shari Tefillah, and we were told that and the rabbi was away, so he told me that there's a Hasidic Shiyid who's going to speak after davening. His name is Rav Asher Weiss. I said, "Who's that?" He said, "He's a person who speaks to all different kinds of audiences. That's what he's known for." So I got up. I said, "There's a fellow here speaking, and he speaks to all different kinds of audiences in Israel, and they say he's a Talmud Chacham." You know, it wasn't much more than that. And then Rav Asher Weiss got up to speak, and oh my gosh, life-changing, right? You hear that, and you're like, wow, I've just encountered greatness. But he was already 40-something years old at the time. He was close to 50 years old at the time. Where was he before that? Where was he? Where was he? He was learning Yom HaValayla. He was teaching his own small group of Talmidim. He wasn't the world famous Rav Asher Weiss. He was writing and learning, and he wrote most of his svarim, many of his svarim then. His real, most serious, I mean, they're all serious and great svarim, but the svarim on the Masechtas, he wrote then. You guys probably never even learned the svarim on the Masechtas yet, but those are his best ones as far as I'm concerned. That's how people develop. By spending a lot of time developing themselves before they can become these forces in the community, always with an eye toward the community, always with an eye toward Klal Yisrael. And that's the way we're supposed to be. So, you know, when you have your time in the yeshiva, you have your time where you're able to focus on your learning and you're able to develop in your learning, you have to use that time very, very wisely. You can't waste that time. You know, a lot of times people feel that they have a million different responsibilities, that they should do this and they should go change the world. I could tell you, I remember my chevra when I was your age. There were guys that were going and changing the world, and there were guys that were learning Bas Mada. And I always assumed that the guys that were going and changing the world were ultimately actually going to change the world. It didn't always work out that way. In fact, most often it worked out the opposite. The guys who were learning Bas Mada, kind, good people, B'nai Torah, B'nai Aliyah, Bali Midas Tovos, but they weren't going around changing the world. They were learning Bas Mada every minute of every Seder. Those are the guys that made the greatest impact. You know, Rav Moshe Feinstein was a Posek Hadar. Everything stopped at his door. They say when Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach got a phone call from Rav Moshe Feinstein, he stood up and put on his hat. Rav Shlomo Zalman couldn't even see him. Rav Moshe couldn't even see him. They were on the phone. It wasn't like he wasn't on, you know, on a WhatsApp video chat. He wasn't on a Zoom. He wasn't on, you know, they didn't have any of that. It was science fiction back in those days that you'd be able to see someone when you talk to them. That wasn't Shaykh. And he stood up for Rav Moshe Feinstein. I think it was Rav David Willig told me he once had to deliver a letter. Rav Moshe needed to deliver a letter to Rav Eliyashiv. So he brought the letter to Eretz Yisrael. Or maybe it was Rav Shlomo Zalman. He brought the letter to Eretz Yisrael. He called up, I think it was Rav Shlomo Zalman, and said, I have a letter from Rav Moshe Feinstein, I'll bring it tomorrow. Next thing he knew, Rav Shlomo Zalman was at his door. A letter from Rav Moshe Feinstein doesn't wait. Rav Moshe Feinstein, where did he develop? How did he become? He was all alone with his brother and his father in some city deep in Russia. Not even part of a yeshiva. All alone. Yet Rav Soloveitchik, when he describes his youth, who were his best friends in his youth? His best friends were the Rambam and the Ravid. He really had friends. Now, friends are very important. I'm not downplaying that at all. What I'm trying to emphasize is that if a person wants to become an Ish HaTzibur, look at your own Rebbein. You know how many years Rav Taragin learned with, and continues to learn, obviously, but learned with incredible asmada? You know, he doesn't sleep now. He didn't sleep then either. And then you become a force. And then you become someone who's able to impact the tzibur. And Klal Yisrael has to develop our own sense of achdus. Vayichan, I'm sure, is step one. It's step one. There's always, one thing I learned about Rav Taragin, there's always a next step. You know, you always say, oh, okay, I could do that. And then as soon as it's done, oh, and there's one more thing we're going to do. And another thing. He's five steps ahead of all of us. So he's already figured out how we're going to be an Orla Gayim, how we're going to save the entirety of the world. We're going to end all social problems. We're going to make the UN moot organization, which we already use anyway. And we're going to, you know, we're going to change everything. But it's going to start by building Klal Yisrael. It's going to start with Vayichan Sham Yisrael Neged Ahar. And that's going to start with you. That's going to start with you working on yourselves, on your Asmada, on your Talmud Torah, on your Avodas Hashem, on your Chesed, within your individual families, within your individual communities. And then you'll become a force, Be'ezras Hashem. And when you do that, you're going to create an army of people that are ready to take on, to inspire all of Klal Yisrael, and to change the face of the Jewish people for the better, to create an army that's able to go greet Mashiach Zikenu, where we're going to see that we're going to fulfill our mission individually and as a community the way that we're supposed to. So I wish you all tremendous, tremendous hatzlacha, and thank you very much for coming to learn together this evening.
Thank you very much.